You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting on commercial radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius XM all across the North American continent, on Pacifica stations across America, Europe, and Africa, and on American Forces Radio on every U.S. military base in the world, and simulcast as television on both Dish Network, DirecTV, and other cable systems nationwide by the Free Speech TV Network, plus on the Progressive Voices app on the TuneIn Radio app. Excuse me. And is Senator Sanders with us? He's not in the chair yet. Okay. We're going to, Bernie, we're going to do brunch with Bernie a day early, and we're waiting for him to, he's just sitting down right now. Great. Bernie will be with us in just a moment, and we'll be taking your calls for Senator Sanders today. We're going to do our national town hall meeting a day early. Senator Sanders is going to be on the road tomorrow, so we will be talking with him today. And he's getting wired up right now. Okay, it'll be just a moment. Later on in the program, Shahid Buttar is going to, I think he's going to be in the studio. He might even drop by. Yeah, he's going to be physically here. He's the executive director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. He'll be with us in our second hour. And Reverend Bill Keller, always good for a lively debate, will be with us in the third hour. And Senator Sanders is available?
Yep, right here, Tom.
Hey, Senator Sanders. Great.
Good. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for joining us. So what's going on in your world, in the Senate and in our country?
These are tough times. They are tough times because the country faces almost unprecedented problems, and we have a political party, a major political party, which is determined to do nothing except obstruct, and it becomes very, very distressing. I'm just reading a little bit more about climate change and the fact that the scientific community is virtually unanimous about climate change being caused by human activity, the devastating impacts we're already seeing in terms of drought and floods and forest fires and oceans that are getting warmer and depleted, fish stock, and the migration of people fighting for limited resources. It is a huge problem. And not only are we not addressing the problem, we have a major political party which is rejecting basic science. And that is really, really scary, because I don't know that a modern society, a great nation, survives if basic science is rejected. So that's concerning, you know, in terms of science and how we function as a society. That is very distressing. Now, we're looking at another issue, is that the Highway Trust Fund right now is going broke, and that has to do with the fact that we just don't have enough revenue coming in. And at a time when our infrastructure, according to the American Society of Civil Engineers, needs $3 trillion of investment, $3 trillion just to bring us up to a reasonable place. And that means dealing with our roads and our bridges, our water plants, wastewater plants, our rail, our aging schools. We can't get a bill passed. We can't get a bill passed, and that fund is now going broke, which means that hundreds and hundreds of construction projects around the country which depend on this federal funding will not take place, and it could cost us, if you can believe it, some 700,000 jobs at exactly the time when we need decent-paying jobs. We're fighting right now and continuing the effort to raise the minimum wage. I think almost everybody in America, regardless of political persuasion, understands that $7.25 an hour, which is the federal minimum wage, is a starvation wage. We've got to raise that wage. It is, in terms of inflation, far beyond lower than it used to be. And what we're struggling with now is not only trying to raise the minimum wage, but deal with folks in the Republican Party who want to abolish the concept of the minimum wage, who think that it is undue government restriction to say there should be at least a floor on what employers can pay in the United States. And they would take us back to the time when people are paid pennies an hour. So if you're in a high unemployment area, you can be paid $3-4 an hour. And that is, to some of my right-wing Republican colleagues, what freedom is about. So we have a myriad of very, very serious problems, and a lot of it relates to campaign financing. As a result of this disastrous Citizens United decision, big money interests are now able to spend as much as they want on the political process, and billionaires like the Koch brothers and Sheldon Adelson and others are prepared to do just that. Meanwhile, we have an election coming up in a few months, and the pundits tell us, Tom, that something like 60% of the American people are not going to vote. So the dynamic of contemporary American politics is that billionaires can spend hundreds of millions of dollars in support of right-wing candidates who will make the rich even richer, and yet working people and low-income people are so disgusted with what's going on right now, they're not even voting. So you're having a situation where not only will 60% of the people not vote, if you're lower income, if you're young, we're looking at numbers like 70 or 80% of the people. So what kind of democracy do you have when billionaires buy election and the vast majority of the people no longer even vote?
It's a disaster. You
know? Yeah, it is. And we have got to, it is not easy stuff. Believe me, it is a lot easier to talk about it than to do something about it. But what we have got to do is take on the establishment, take on the corporate media, and just convey to people what democracy is about and how important the political process is. And it just breaks my heart to hear from young people especially, but from a whole lot of people say, oh, politics, you know, it's all crap. They're all thieves. They're all crooks. They're all bums. I'm not getting involved. Yeah. Well, if you're not going to get involved and change the system, if you're not going to get involved and take on the big money interests, if you're not going to get involved, well, I will tell you that the middle class will continue to decline. Poverty will continue to increase. The gap between the very, very rich and everybody else will continue to grow wider. Your job is going to continue to go to China. We're not going to address the enormous planetary crisis of climate change. On the other hand, what we should understand is that change is possible. It can happen. And, you know, one of the very positive things, and we sometimes take it for granted, Tom, is how quickly change comes about when people demand that change. This country has gone a long, long way in terms of overcoming racism. We know that racism still exists. But I think if you and I were talking 20, 30 years ago, we never would have believed there'd be an African-American elected president and reelected. That is a sea change in public consciousness regarding race that we as a nation should be very proud of. The same thing regard women's rights. I remember when I was mayor of the city of Burlington, Vermont, and we appointed the first woman police officer. It was just a huge revolutionary deal. And now you see in every field of life, you know, women participating fully. 20 years ago, I think there was one woman senator. Today there are 19, and that number is only going to go up. Governors, congresspeople. We have made huge progress in opening up all walks of life to women. And I think a lot of young people don't even understand the efforts that so many people made in that struggle. In terms of disability rights, you can remember when we were younger, people who had disabilities were put away in institutions. That's changed. Gay rights has changed. Change can happen, but it doesn't happen unless people are involved in the process.
So very well said. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. He'll be taking your calls right after this break. The rest of the hour, it'll be our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie, here on the Tom Hartman program. So, and I see the calls are queuing up, so we'll get to you in just a moment.
This is the Tom Hartman program.
By the way, NPR did a great piece on Bernie this morning. There's a link to it over at democraticunderground.com, and we'll put one up on our website as well. And welcome back. Gant, watching Free Speech TV on the DirecTV satellite system. You are in Thompson Station, Tennessee. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello?
Gant, you are on the air.
Oh, hi. Senator, it's a pleasure to speak to you. I have a question about the Republican and their agendas. Based on what I'm hearing from you, you're on the halls of the Capitol every day. Is it true that the conservative end of things are deliberately thwarting all of these efforts? I mean, just as a deliberately against Obama? And if so, what is their overall objective to completely thwart all of these budgets, all of these ideas that the president's trying to do? Everything that the moderates to the liberals are trying to do, why are they doing this? And what is the method to their madness, I guess, is my question, because it doesn't really seem to make sense. They're absolutely killing our country.
Well, Gant, there is a method to their madness, and I think it is no great secret that Republicans met literally just at the time when Obama was inaugurated the first time, and they said our strategy has got to be obstructionism to make sure that as little as possible happens, and then when the economy tanks and problems occur, we blame it on the president, because most people don't understand or are following what is going on. So what you have had in the Senate is a record number of filibusters. And by that, I mean not just people getting to the floor and speaking for a long period of time. That's part of Senate tradition. That's always gone on. But what you're seeing now is the demand for 60 votes on virtually every issue. There was a time when, you know, this surprises many Americans. They think, well, a majority wins in the Senate. It doesn't. You need now on virtually every single piece of legislation, significant or minor, 60 votes. That used to be the exception to the rule. Now it is the rule. And that means that the Republicans can defeat almost everything. And that is unprecedented, that level of obstructionism. So we are now a dysfunctional institution where virtually nothing is getting done, despite the fact that we have huge, huge problems. And what the Republicans believe, and it may in fact end up working the way they hope, is that if Congress doesn't act, if problems are not addressed, people will blame the president. Most people in this country don't know which party controls the House and controls the Senate. They don't know those things. So they will blame President Obama. They will forget what Bush did, and they will blame President Obama. So that is the method in their madness, but I'm not so sure. It is a terrible, terrible approach if you're concerned about the future of America, if you're concerned about the middle class, if you're concerned about the elderly or the kids. But, in fact, from a political point of view, it may not be so crazy.
Yeah. We just have 10 seconds till the break here, Senator.
Antidote to all of this stuff is, Tom, is we need people to be thinking about politics and government in a way they never have.
Getting politically active, movement politics.
Yes, absolutely.
And showing up to not just the vote, but even the front of office. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. We'll be back with more of your calls for him in our Brunch with Bernie segment here on the Tom Hartman Program. Check out his website, sanders.senate.gov. Past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. We're doing Brunch with Bernie a day early, as Senator Sanders is traveling tomorrow. And Amy, in Madison, Wisconsin, you are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Oh, thank you. Senator Sanders, Sherrod Brown is trying to get the reallocation of the FICA for the Disability Trust Fund so there won't be an automatic 21% to the disabled in 2016. Do you support Sherrod Brown?
Absolutely. Sherrod is doing a great job. He's on the Finance Committee. There have been, you know, when people ask me what is the Republican agenda, in a sentence it is to make the rich richer and to cut virtually every program that the middle class or working families, or in this case the disabled, depend upon. There is no tax break out there for the rich or large corporations that the Republicans don't support. They would, Tom, do away with the estate tax, which applies to the wealthiest of the wealthy, fewer than 1% of the population. They would abolish that and cost us many billions of dollars of revenue. But when it comes to attacking the middle class or working families or programs that people desperately depend upon, they will go after those programs. So, Amy, the answer is, of course I am. We work very, very hard to prevent cuts to Social Security. We had to take on the, you know, much of the entire world to do that. We were successful in defeating the so-called chain CPI, which would have made devastating cuts in Social Security, and we're going to fight hard against any cuts to people who are on disability benefits.
Fred in Sarasota, Florida, listening on SiriusXM. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thank you, Senator, for everything that you do for us. I got an email yesterday from my commander at my veterans organization that the application process workers at the VA applications were shifted from doing UA business to processing Obamacare. Now, this is going around to the veterans organizations. Can you tell me if this is true or false, sir?
No, it is not true.
Oh, my God. I mean, it is absolutely terrible. No matter what I looked up, I couldn't find it anywhere with a reputable source. But this is happening among the leaders of veterans organizations. I wish somebody could pick up on this so I could prove it to these
people. Well,
thank you, Fred.
You know, what can I tell you? Right now, I think there may be an effort in some cases to tell veterans what they are entitled to in terms of health care benefits, but the idea that we're shifting people away is just not accurate. And by the way, while we're on veterans issues, Fred, I want you to know that we are working very, very hard right now in order to pass a very significant and important piece of veterans legislation, which would end the waiting periods that veterans are experiencing in various locations around the country, enable them to go outside of the VA temporarily to get the health care that they need, and at the same time bring in new doctors and nurses and other medical personnel so that veterans can get quality health care in a timely manner at the VA. It's an issue we are spending a lot of time and energy on right now.
Marlise in Cloverdale, California, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to ask Bernie, are we able to, like, get together, all of us, like, all the groups, like 350.org and all of them, and basically fight the fossil fuel, you know, with strength, you know, and power? I would also recommend to you and Tom both that you read the Nation issue on 512 that had an article by Chris Hayes, Naomi Klein, and also Dan Zegart. See, to me, there is no reason, or anyway, I'm sorry. I think all of you should call the Republicans out for what they are. They're unpatriotic. They're un-American.
Okay. Marlise, we're wandering into multiple topics here.
Let me just respond to Marlise. I know Chris Hayes and I know Naomi Klein, and they do fantastic work. And here's what the issue is. This is not even being unpatriotic. We are facing a situation where the scientific community is virtually unanimous. And it was interesting, Tom, I don't know if you noticed, that the BBC recently announced that they were not going to give equivalent time to the deniers and the scientists.
Right. The LA Times did that a while back, too.
Did they? Yeah. In other words, you have a reality. Climate change is real. That's not debatable anymore.
Right.
And it is already causing devastating problems in this country, and those problems will only get worse. The issue here is how can people risk the future of the planet by continuing to deny what is absolutely scientifically verified, and do that because they're more interested, perhaps, in some cases, getting campaign contributions from the Koch brothers and other fossil fuel companies. And these guys are sacrificing the habitability, if you like, of this planet, the well-being of this planet, not only for our generation, but for future generations. So we have people like groups like 350.org and other groups are doing a fantastic job mobilizing people, and we have got to continue that effort. And by the way, I would say that the momentum is with us. People now see with their eyes what is happening to the planet all over the world. and more people understand that we have got to become energized and aggressive in combating climate change.
Senator, we have 25 seconds here. Is there a legislative solution? I mean, things like carbon taxes?
Yeah, I have introduced that legislation along with Senator Barbara Boxer. And it would have a profound impact on transforming our energy system right now. We'll get to that in a minute.
Sure. Okay. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. We're doing it a day early because Senator Sanders is going to be traveling tomorrow. And we're very glad you can be with us today, Thursday. We'll be right back with more of your calls for Bernie right after this. Be sure to check out his website at sanders.senate.gov.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And NPR did a nice segment this morning profiling Senator Sanders. It may be on his website. It certainly will be on ours, and it's over at democraticunderground.com. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Program, and we're doing Brunch with Bernie an hour, our day early here this hour. Senator Sanders taking your calls. And Kevin in Santa Fe, New Mexico, listening on KTRC, you are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Senator Sanders, thanks for all your hard work. You too, Tom. I wanted to ask, when you caucus with the Democrats, is there someone who's in charge of combating these erroneous Republican talking points? For example, a Republican congressman wrote an article and said, $800 million a year in taxes is going to fight the failed war on poverty. And it makes my head explode that nobody's there saying, what do you mean $800 million a year, and taking some facts and taking him down a peg?
The answer is yes. But very often people don't see what people are saying or trying to do. And a lot of this stuff does get out without the kind of proper response that we need. But I think, you know, people will go to the floor of the Senate. People will do press conferences, but not all of these responses get out to people, which takes us to an issue that I have long been concerned about and why I'm so proud to work with Tom Hartman, is that we need a media out here to talk to people about the real issues that impact their lives and tell them what is pretty radical, which is the truth. And I think that Kevin is right. There's just a lot of dishonest statements. People come up with the craziest statements. They are not being refuted. But what I would say, Kevin, is yes, there is a huge attempt to try to confront the dishonesty that we hear every single day from our Republican colleagues.
Don in Delaware, listening on Sirius XM. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. Earlier this week in the Wall Street Journal, they said an article on Senator Clinton that she's going to the right of President Obama and on most of his policies. Will this help you make up your mind on running against her in 2016?
Well, you know, one of the things that just... You know, you'll be surprised to hear me say this. It just, I get very tired about all of the political gossip that is out there about Senator Clinton or about anybody else. I don't think the Wall Street Journal knows what her positions are on the issues. I have very little doubt that my views are going to be far more progressive than Senator Clinton's. But there's a lot of, I think, gossip going on around her. But what I will say to you, Don, is that as a nation, and one of the reasons I am giving some thought to running for president, is we need a serious discussion on the major issues facing our country. And it appalls me very, very much that over 60% of the American people don't know which parties control the House and the Senate, have very little idea about what is in the budget, know very little about the role that the Republican Party plays in trying to protect the wealthy and the powerful and obstruct almost any progress toward helping the middle class or working families. So what we need, and if I run, this is what I want to do, is to start a very serious discussion about why it is that the middle class is disappearing while the rich get much richer. Why it is that big money today is able to buy elections and 60% of the people in November are not going to vote. Why it is that we are not effectively dealing with climate change and creating the millions of jobs that we can, transforming our energy system or rebuilding our infrastructure. So I am not interested in what the Wall Street Journal is speculating about Hillary Clinton. What I'm interested in is a serious debate about how we can once again have a middle class and a working class that has a decent standard of living, how we can have a democracy where one vote, one person is what it's about, not big money buying elections. And that is something I feel very, very strongly about. We need that debate. And I think when we have that debate, you're going to find that the overwhelming majority of the American people do not believe that government should be giving more and more tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires and cutting payments for disability people, people on disability benefits, or Social Security, or Medicare and Medicaid. And our job is to bring the American people together around an agenda which stands for the vast majority and not just the 1%.
Kurt in Scranton, Pennsylvania, listening on WFTE. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Well, Senator Tom, thanks so much for being there for us. My question is based around the intellectual and mental sub-skills needed to confront our problems. I'm the founder of a small nonprofit called the Common Sense Revival, and we're promoting critical thinking and positive psychology. And to that end, when I ran for Congress, the slogan was, give every child a chance. How, Senator, can we create an equally funded, critical thinking-based school system so that the great swath of America is ready to address these challenges and figure out what are the lies and what are the truths about our circumstances today?
Well, Kurt, that is a great question, and it would take us a very long time to answer it. But let me first of all thank you for focusing attention on the most vulnerable people in our country, the kids, who very rarely get the kind of focus that their needs require. We kind of push aside the fact that we have the highest rate of childhood poverty, close to 22%, the highest rate of childhood poverty of any major country on earth, that we have huge numbers of kids who are dependent upon their nutrition, they get food stamps for their nutrition. We have a very, very high unemployment rate for young people. Our dropout rate for kids in high school is astronomical, and these kids then wander out into society, hanging out on street corners, doing drugs, doing self-destructive activity. So a focus on the future of America, which is our kids, making sure they get good quality childcare when their parents are at work, good quality education, have the ability, regardless of their incomes of their families, to go to college, that is what we should be thinking about. And also, when you talk about critical thought, it means having excellent schools, investing in our schools, understanding that teachers do some of the most important work in America, treating them with respect, paying them accordingly, but putting a premium on understanding that intellectual activity and education is one of the most important things that our society should be doing.
Gordon in Spokane, Washington. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes. Before I ask my question, I just wanted to start out saying that, as we all know, FDR gave us the New Deal. Senator Sanders, you are the real deal, and I sincerely hope you will run in 2016. My question is, when Vermont, the state of Vermont, in the process of implementing single payer in that state, are they going to take the private insurance companies out of the equation, which is the way it should be done?
Well, Gordon, you can't have a single payer system if you have private insurance companies in the system. So the answer is yes. What there may be, I think there is still a debate as to whether the entity to run the system will be the state itself or the state will contract out with another entity. But certainly private insurance companies seeking to make a profit off of health care will be out of that equation.
Aaron in Charleston, West Virginia. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good afternoon, Senator. I was just going to say, I feel like it's a bipartisan issue, but I was wondering, where Congress is at working towards protecting individual privacy rights.
Thank you very much, Erin, for that very important question. It is a bipartisan issue in the sense that there are some very conservative Republicans who are at least consistent in their opposition to big government. When you hear Republicans talking about, we hate big government, that's why we got to cut Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, et cetera, we know where they're coming from. But then when they are asked to say, well, what about big government in terms of the NSA collecting data on your phone calls or getting into your emails or getting into your websites, don't you think that that is big government intrusion? Don't you think that's unconstitutional? Don't you think that is an invasion of privacy rights? Some of these anti-government people withdraw on that issue. So you are seeing, Erin, a kind of unusual coalition coming together of progressives and others and conservatives trying to beat back this effort, not only on the part of government and modern technology to intrude in every aspect of our lives, but also private corporations doing the same. You would be quite surprised, Erin, that there are private companies out there who know a whole lot about you, a lot more than you think that they do. So I think if freedom means anything, it is being able to have a modicum, at least, of privacy without having government or the private sector and large corporations knowing everything about our lives.
Do you, 20 seconds, Senator, do you see any movement in Congress to do something about this?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think there is an effort to, I would go further than where Congress will go, but there is an effort to, I think, rein in the NSA and other intelligence agencies from intruding into our lives.
Great. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment here, our national town hall meeting with Senator Sanders that we have every week. We're doing it a day early today, so we'll be back with more of your calls for Senator Sanders right after this. Be sure to check out his website, sanders.senate.gov.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And over at TomHartman.com, you can also drop into our free live chat room and participate in conversation with some of the finest minds on it. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Senator Sanders on the line with us. Paul in South Lyon, Michigan, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Satellite Network. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, thanks, gentlemen. I'm an economist, and I constantly hear congressional Republicans say we can't afford unemployment insurance, food stamps, or money for infrastructure or veterans benefits. This is like a farmer saying, I can't afford to buy seeds, so I'm going to save $500 on seeds and give up $100,000 in income on the crops. When the government spends $50 billion on infrastructure, for example, that money goes into the economy and changes hands on a daily basis. People go out to eat. You know, and then people at the restaurant pay taxes on their money. Then they go stay at a hotel on vacation. People at the hotel pay taxes on their money. And in the long run, there is no cost to the government. It's like priming a pump. That water isn't wasted. You get it all back. Isn't that true, Senator?
Paul, thank you very much. I think in 2 minutes you gave a very cogent analysis of demand-side economics. And here's the reality. And Paul is exactly right. 70% of the economy depends upon consumer spending. And that is when I go out and spend money, I'm creating a job for somebody else. If I go into a restaurant or I buy food or I buy a service or I buy a product, somebody else is getting a job as a result of my expenditures. If you have a situation, which you have right now, where 95% of all new income goes to the top 1%, if you have a situation where tens of millions of people have seen a decline in their standard of living and just don't have any money to spend, we cannot create the jobs, especially decent-paying jobs, that we need. So when Paul talks about raising the minimum wage or putting money into our infrastructure and creating jobs, it means that working people now are having money coming in, and they are able to go out and spend that money And in doing that, they create jobs. So Paul is exactly right. And that analogy of a farmer not investing in seeds, or furthermore, a company not investing in advertising, you don't make any money. This is how you create economic growth, how you create jobs, by putting money into the hands of working people, many of whom do not have that money today. So, Paul, thank you very much for that wonderful description of exactly what is happening and where we have to go.
Senator, we have about 50 seconds. We used to talk, before Reagan, we used to talk about government investments. Government, and now Republicans always attach the word spending to any money that government puts out. How do we shift that back to talking about government investing rather than spending?
Well, we've got to do a lot of education on that. In other words, when you invest in infrastructure, you not only, as Paul just indicated, create jobs and get that money spent and respent, you also improve the productivity and efficiency of this country. We are losing billions of dollars a year because cars are experiencing damage, going over potholes. People are waiting on long traffic jams, burning up gas and polluting the environment. Improving the infrastructure saves all of that by government investment.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us. We'll be back with more your calls for Senator Sanders right after this. It's 10 minutes before the hour. The hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Matt in Marysville, California. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good morning, gentlemen. Hey, real quick question for you, Senator. We know that Mitch McConnell and the Republicans are obstructing just about any common sense bill that you folks are trying to move forward. What are you and or Senator Reid doing to bypass this obstructionism?
Well, Matt, thank you for the question. Here's what's happened. The Republicans were doing so much obstructionism in terms of demanding 60 votes and drawing out things day after day that could have been done in a few minutes, that what the majority leader, Harry Reid, did a number of months ago is said, okay, look, enough is enough. We can't even get presidential nominees through in a reasonable period of time. President appoints somebody to some agency. It drags on for month after month after month. We can't get judges appointed to courts where we have significant numbers of vacancies. So what he said is, on those issues, I am going to pass a rule, which the Democrats supported, that you're not going to need 60 votes, that you're going to need 50 votes. And the result of that is a whole lot of judges have been appointed. It's taken time to do that. Nominees have been able to get through in a lot quicker way. In my view, and I've been very clear about this, I think that Harry Reid should go further and basically say to the Republicans, look, if you want to continue to obstruct on these enormously important issues that impact the lives of working families throughout this country, whether it's health care, whether it is jobs, whether it is climate change, whether it is education, sorry, you can't do it. You're not the majority. You can't obstruct. And what I have suggested and others have suggested is we should take this majority vote, 51 votes, to all pieces of legislation, not just presidential nominees and judges. I think if you do that, we can pass real legislation. It will certainly be held up in the House. But the American people can then see what we are trying to do, or at least what most of us are trying to do, and what the House is doing, and they can make a judgment about which policies they feel comfortable with, and I think they will feel much more comfortable with the policies that we are advocating.
And correct me if I'm wrong, the two big issues that the Senate has actually passed that John Boehner is refusing to bring to a vote on the floor of the House because they would pass if he did are the extension of long-term unemployment benefits and the comprehensive immigration reform. Are there other pieces of legislation?
Those are the two major ones, Tom. So yeah. What you're saying is, which is right, but then people can make a judgment.
Right.
The problem we're having is we can't even get bills to the House for them to reject.
Right. Got it. Mark in Brooklyn, New York. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good afternoon, Senator Sanders. Good afternoon, Tom. I am curious. Health insurance cost is a business expense, right? And why aren't businesses pushing to have universal health care coverage? Because if they have that, then they wouldn't have that expense.
Well, Mark, that is an interesting question. And common sense would suggest that businesses would say, you know what? We in America are the only country in the world where the businesses are forced to accept a very expensive proposition, and that is providing health care to their workers. Up in Canada, that's not the case. Throughout Europe, Scandinavia, that is not the case. In every major country on earth except the United States, there are national health care programs guaranteeing health care to all people. So I think, Mark, your question is an excellent one. I wonder about it myself. I think this is an example where ideology, in some cases where conservative business people choose ideology, their hesitations about government, rather than what makes good business sense, and that is to allow them to focus on their business rather than the very complicated and expensive proposition of providing health care to their workers. And at the end of the day, and there was just a study that came out a couple of weeks ago from the Commonwealth Fund reiterating what everybody knows to be true. The United States of America per capita spends far more on health care than do the people of any other major country on earth, and yet our outcomes compared to other countries are often not good. So the challenge that we face is getting the burden of health care off of the business community, creating, in my view, a Medicare for all single-payer system, running a high-quality, cost-effective health care system, which will be good for the people and certainly good for the businesses themselves.
We have about 2 minutes, Senator. You want to take another question or you want
to? Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do that.
All right. Ivan, can you make it a short question, please, in Chicago, listening on WCPT?
Hey, Senator Sanders, I'll vote for you in a heartbeat and send you money. Let me suggest how the Christian right teabags have been bamboozled into believing that money and politics is part of religious freedom in America. You know, the old message of charlatans like Oral Roberts used to be, send me all your money and God will reward you with a place in heaven. Now they preach, send me all your money and God will make you rich just like me. Now this leads to...
Ivan, your question is running too long. Is there a question there? Or?
Yeah. Don't you think this belief allows Republicans like Herman Cain say, if you ain't rich, blame yourself?
Okay, got it. Got it. Senator?
Well, I think, Ivan, you make a good point. I think one of the things that distresses me very much, there was just an article that came out the other day, that most poor people live in states controlled by Republicans. And yet day after day, Republicans are working against the best interest of those constituents, denying them access to Medicaid, not raising the minimum wage, et cetera, et cetera. So, Ivan, what I would suggest is, first of all, the Democratic Party needs a 50-state strategy, has got to get into the South, has got to get into the Southwest big time. And we need a strong grassroots movement whose goal is to make sure that people are not voting against their own best interest, who are not voting for folks who are sending their jobs to China or denying educational opportunities to their kids.
Senator Sanders, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Great to have you with us. And check out Bernie's website at sanders.senate.gov. We'll be back with Shahid Buttar, of the Bill of Rights Committee and the People's Campaign for the Constitution.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. Shahid will be with us when he arrives. He's on his way. But meanwhile, I've got a large stack of stuff here that I wanted to share with you today. So let me get into some of this. First of all, you will recall, I don't remember if it was 2 years ago or 4 years ago. I think it was 4 years ago. I could be wrong. I don't do time well. But Nancy Skinner, who is an old friend of mine, Nancy, when I started this show, when Louise and I started this show, literally out of our living room of our home in Montpelier, Vermont, the network that syndicated us was the IE America Network, which was owned by the UAW. It was operating out of Detroit, and we were on 30-some-odd radio stations plus Sirius satellite radio, and Nancy Skinner did a three-hour show just before my show. Or maybe it was just after. I'm pretty sure, though, it preceded it. And, you know, she'd been a talk show host. Nancy's done a lot of things in her life, and she has she's got a remarkable CV, resume. And she ran for Congress, and without any help from the Democratic Party, she damn near won. And she was going up against the 9th District of Michigan. And the race came out 51-47, as I recall. And she was like outspent massively going up against an incumbent Republican. So now, because of redistricting, where she lives is now Michigan House District 11. And she's running and District 11 is actually a swing district. It could very easily go Republican. It's being represented right now in Congress by a first-term Tea Party Republican who denies climate change. And my old friend Nancy Skinner and colleague, Nancy Skinner is running against this guy. Well, she's actually running in the Democratic primary first. But you know, if she makes it through the primary, and I think there's a very good chance she will, then she's going to be running a campaign based on climate change. She's going to make that the centerpiece of her campaign, and she's running against a Tea Partier who denies global warming. And this is really getting hot. So I think this is just great. You can Nancy Skinner, it's spelled just the way it sounds, and I'm sure I haven't Googled her. I don't have a website for her. I'm sorry to give you right now. I just came across this just as we were going on the air, and I didn't have a chance to dig into that. But she does have. There's actually an article about her. The article I read was Gaius Publius' blog, AmericaBlog.com. So if you go over to AmericaBlog.com. You can see this whole thing on Nancy Skinner. So that's number one. Number two, Americans have spent enough money on a broken plane to buy every homeless person in America a mansion. Center for American Progress, Hayes Brown, blogging over there at thinkprogress.org. They're talking about the F-35, the Lightning Joint Strike Fighter. It's been grounded. Doesn't work. It's a boondoggle, basically. And if we took just the money that we've spent on this boondoggle, just that money could have provided every homeless person in the United States with a $600,000 home. $398.6 million we've spent on this thing. That's mind-boggling. It would unilaterally fund every humanitarian crisis. This is really quite remarkable. Syria, Iraq, South Sudan, and others, millions of refugees. We could feed every school child in the United States. We could provide security around the world. We could fund the entire UN peacekeeping program. We could boost funding to rebuild America. I mean, there's just so much. Why are we doing this? I don't get it. There's a great piece. William Black is posting over at neweconomicperspectives.org. It's the title of the piece is The Big Lie at the Core of Pete Peterson's Attack on the Baby Boomers. Pete Peterson, of course, is a billionaire who made his money on Wall Street. And for the last decade or so, he has been funding the Peterson Institute and a bunch of other groups that are running around telling people Medicare is going to go bankrupt. Medicare is a disaster. It's quack, quack, quack. Funds politicians, funds these think tanks, funds, getting these messages on television and radio. For a while, he was actually getting some traction there, you know, because he had Tweedledum and Tweedledee, who were those two guys, the retired senator and, yeah, Alan Cranston, no, it's not Cranston. We're all having brain farts here today. Anyway, Bowles and Simpson. Thank you very much. He had Simpson and Bowles going on this thing, you know, and everybody's like, well, there must be some credibility there. Oh, no, they're in the bag too. So his new thing now, because they're looking at the certainty that as the boomers age and die, most of their money is going to end up in the hands of the millennials. And we're talking $30 trillion. That's a significant amount of money. And one of the things William Black points out, one of the things that banksters hate more than anything else is, here's what Makovsky said. There's a finance industry PR specialist. He said, millennials are larger than the baby boomers when it comes to wealth transfer. They're expected to inherit more than $30 trillion in the future. One thing that makes banks, financial advisors, and brokerage firms very nervous is money changing hands, because it usually doesn't stay where it was. A disconnect with millennials puts financial brands at a great disadvantage and potentially missing the boat. By disconnect, he's talking about the fact that the millennials get it, that the big banksters are screwing us, that the big banksters are responsible for them being screwed. The big banksters are the ones who are making money off this $1 trillion in student debt that's out there that shouldn't even exist. And so, you know, if their parents or grandparents have their money in one of these giant, too-big-to-fail banks, and the kids inherit it, they're going to say, screw that, I'm going to put it in a local credit union, or I'm going to put it in a local community bank. You know, not going to take a chance with one of the big ones. And the big banks are very concerned about this. So Pete Peterson and the Bank of America have got this thing called the Khan Academy, K-A-H-N Academy, and they are running around trying to educate millennials. Right. Bank of America's recent partnership, this PR thing, recent partnership with Khan Academy could be a new approach to educating millennials about money, credit, lending, and investing. Yes, a new approach to investing. Just what we need. And finally, this from Public Citizen, citizen.org, the organization that Ralph Nader birthed back 30 years ago. You've heard about SHAFTA, the Southern Hemisphere Asian Trade Agreement, Free Trade Agreement, SHAFTA. The administration refers to it as the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I prefer SHAFTA. It's also accurate. It is the Southern Hemisphere Asian Free Trade Agreement. There's also a bilateral trade agreement, just the United States and China, that is being pushed. And it's called BIT, B-I-T, the China Bilateral Investment Treaty. And what citizen.org is saying is that if we do this deal, Chinese acquisitions and the establishment of U.S. subsidiaries growing at 80% annual rate with 820 major deals totaling more than $37 billion since 2000. This is where we're at. It's going to get a whole lot worse. So, and nearly 90% of these deals by value are Chinese takeovers of existing U.S. companies. Get ready. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And Shahid will be with us in about 5 minutes. Stick around. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And find the button. Mark, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Satellite Network in Chico, California. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I am great, but I'll get better. Mark, how about you?
I'm doing much better. Last time I called you, I talked about how California was named, and I couldn't breathe, and I had pneumonia, and I had to go to the hospital in an ambulance.
Oh, my goodness.
I spent 3 days in the hospital, and I'm feeling much better.
Good.
So, yes.
So you wanted to talk about a nonprofit to help people vote?
Yeah. Could a person or could a nonprofit start up a place where people connect money in all excuse me, in all 50 states to help people get IDs, birth certificates, and volunteer rights to get people to vote?
Yes, not only is the answer yes, and emphatically yes, but in fact there was an organization that did just that, and particularly working in communities of color and among poor people, but they also were working in you know, Appalachia and whatnot, in white communities, poor white communities as well, although their main area of focus was urban areas, and that was ACORN. And they got taken down by this slimy young whippersnapper who gets on Fox News a lot, making a totally deceptive video that seemed to show a member of ACORN saying to this kid who is dressed up like a pimp that they would help him get his non-citizen prostitutes registered to vote, or some variation on that. And in fact, what was going on was that the guy at ACORN, who was being secretly filmed by James O'Keefe, the guy at ACORN was going along with what O'Keefe was saying because he wanted to hear the whole spiel. And as soon as O'Keefe left the office, this guy called the police. But somehow Fox News forgot to mention that every single time they reported it. Somehow the entire Republican caucus in the House and Senate was unaware of that. I don't know if you saw the article that came out yesterday. Fox News is accurate 8% of the time. More than half of the time they're telling lies. And it is now fairly well documented. And so, yeah, there is such an, you know, there could be such an organization. There was such an organization. The Republicans viewed it, and Fox News viewed it as a mortal threat to their existence. And so they took them down. They took them out. And we really need to see something like, I'm with you, we really need to see something like ACORN reborn. Obviously not with the same name. That name has been so badly trashed. And I guarantee you that any organization that devotes itself, I mean, they've even gone after the League of Women Voters. The League of Women Voters in Florida has stopped registering people to vote, because the state put these draconian, and it's not just Florida, several states have passed these ALEC-based laws, these Koch brother-inspired laws, that say that if you're helping somebody vote and you make a mistake or they make a mistake in their registration, and it could even be a mistake like putting RD period when your actual address is R-O-A-D, road, if you make a mistake, then you, who helped them register to vote, you can go to jail. And so, I mean, they're just like, you know, they do not want people to vote. That's the bottom line. But, Mark, I agree with you that we need something like that. Thanks a lot for the call. 20 minutes past the hour. Shahid Buttar will be with us in just a moment. Yeah. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Shahid Buttar is with us. He's the executive director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee and the People's Campaign for the Constitution, PCC. The website, BORDC, as in Bill of Rights Defense Committee, .org, BORDC.org. Shahid, welcome.
Thanks for having me on, Tom. It's always good to see you.
It's great to have you here on the radio show. Usually you're on our evening TV show. Say what? Oh, turn them down. There we go. Okay. All these magical things here. So we learned yesterday, or the day before yesterday, I guess it was,
yeah,
from the latest publication of Glenn Greenwald, from the stuff that Snowden gave him long ago and far away,
yeah,
that five upstanding Muslim men, including the executive director of CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations,
yeah,
the largest Islamic civil rights group in the country, that these five men, one who served in the Bush administration with his top security clearance, mm-hmm, that these, mm-hmm, guys are being spied on during the Bush administration.
A Republican candidate for the Virginia House of Delegates, even. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, what's going on here? And you know, well, what's the state of things right now?
Yeah. At the very least, what we learned from the story is that the NSA is monitoring Muslim Americans. And I would just invite us to think about it in more expansive terms than that, because that is just the tip of the iceberg. These particular people are the ones that Greenwald and Snowden named specifically to give them a chance to challenge spying in court. They have thousands of other names that they've agreed not to release to the public, many of whom are not Muslims. And I've heard a lot of people suggest that, well, if it's just Muslims being spied on, well, we've already accepted that as a society. That's not so bad. The problem, of course, is that the targets of domestic surveillance extend widely beyond Muslims. For instance,
if you could pick a couple of Tea Partiers.
Yeah, they're out there, too. Yeah, in fact, so remember in 2008, the Department of Homeland Security suggested that anyone with a Ron Paul bumper sticker was a potential domestic terrorist because they would be likely to be recruited by militia groups. They said the same thing about returning U.S. service members coming home from armed service in Afghanistan or Iraq, particularly those with explosives training, because they would be very attractive recruits, not only to violence extremists motivated by a religious ideology, but also by white supremacist militias in the Pacific Northwest or in the mountain states.
Right.
Right. And so,
well, not just there. I mean, I grew up in Michigan, and the Michigan militia is
the UP
famous. Yeah,
yeah, no doubt. So which is just to say, a lot of Americans have been tagged as threats, and there's no reason to presume that the NSA hasn't been following any of them simply because we don't have the smoking gun memo as we do for these five others. And so, and you know, just to note, some of the other people who we do know affirmatively have been targeted by NSA surveillance include the ex-lovers of at least a dozen agents who confessed to using the government's powerful tools to spy on their ex-wives, basically to stalk women. So women in domestic violence situations, or at least in...
Wait a minute. By agents, you're talking about the people inside the NSA were spying on their girlfriends, basically, or spying on somebody that they want to be their girlfriend.
In a dozen cases where they admitted it.
Wow.
And so what else does that suggest? If there are tens of thousands of people and nobody knows what's going on behind the curtain, it's all secret, and the only reason we have any even modicum of transparency is because whistleblowers have risked prosecution, yeah, and jail time, or in Edward Snowden's case, exile.
Back in the late 60s, I was in SDS at Michigan State University, and we discovered in the early 70s that we'd all been spied on.
Indeed.
And we got the files released. The red files, the red squad.
Through FOIA?
Through Michigan, yeah, through FOIA.
Okay.
And through another lawsuit also. And largely that was possible because Frank Church convened this committee, and what came out of the Church Commission were these reforms in the early 70s,
yep,
that made it possible for us to go back and say, okay, you know, let us see the files from 1968 or 69, and which were the years that I was in the middle of all this stuff. And 67, in fact. And so we haven't yet had that, you know, moment of confrontation, that moment of truth.
Right.
We haven't seen anything legislative like this. Ron Wyden seems to talk about this kind of thing. Bernie Sanders is gung-ho for it. But
Rand Paul might present it next year. If
you
not,
think?
Well, I mean, if he runs for the presidency, he's going to put this stuff right in the middle of his campaign, the,
yeah,
same way that the present president did.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it was in the middle of the Obama campaign,
back
too.
Back in 2008.
Yeah, he promised in writing on the Huffington Post to rein these problems in as a candidate 6 years ago. And, of course, you know, not, as far as we know, a lick of that has found its way into reality. You mentioned the Church Committee, which I think is fascinating to think about for a couple of reasons. I mean, the legacy of the Church Committee has been so thoroughly eroded. it's kind of a travesty in open sight, you know, Dianne Feinstein in her capacity as the chair of the Contemporary Senate Intelligence Committee, which was founded to continue the work of the Church Committee, has been a shill for the intelligence agencies, with her the conspicuous exception of her rant against the CIA recently for spying on her committee. You know, she's at least nominally independent vis-a-vis torture, though she's totally complicit.
Until she gets spied on.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, hey, wait a minute. I'm being spied on?
Right.
What? We can't have that.
Oh, man.
Indeed.
So,
and we need another church committee, is all I'd say.
This is the thing that I'm calling for.
Absolutely.
Whenever I talk to a member of Congress, it's like, you know, would you support another church committee? What are your organization, the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, BORDC.org, or Twitter at BORDC. What are you all doing?
Couple different things. So one of them is trying to find a GOP co-sponsor for the Surveillance State Repeal Act. That's the bill that Rush Holt, progressive Democrat from New Jersey,
who is not running for re-election.
He is. That's right. He's retiring, and so he's the principal sponsor of this bill. And so with him retiring, we need to find other people to keep it alive. This is the bill that was originally introduced as the Justice Act, cultivated and crafted over 2 years by the former Senator Russ Feingold, who was the lone dissenting vote against the Patriot Act when it was first proposed.
Right.
And so this is the Anti-Patriot Act. It would reverse the Patriot Act. It would reverse the 2008 FISA amendments. It was crafted very carefully by a member of Congress with a seat on both the Judiciary and the Intelligence Committees. This is Feingold, who sank a good deal of time and expertise into crafting it. It's been sitting around for the last 6 years for someone principled to introduce and pass, ever since Congress legalized what Edward Snowden has since revealed. And so for the members of Congress who are inclined to walk the talk about privacy, about checks and balances, about
the legislation's already done.
It's waiting.
And nobody has dropped this in either the House or the Senate.
It has been dropped in the House. Rush Holt against this co-sponsor. And there's about a dozen co-sponsors, all Democrats in the Progressive Caucus.
Got to wrap. Thank you, Sean.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
That's Shahid Buttar. The website is BORDC, as in Bill of Rights Defense Committee, BORDC.org. We'll be back. Paired only slightly unbalanced. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back. Mark Taylor Canfield. Let me get my cursor here going. There we go. Mark Taylor Canfield in Seattle. Hey, Mark, welcome back to the program. A reporter, blogger, Huffington Post, and all kinds of other cool places. You've got a story about the first day of legal pot in Washington State?
Yes, Tom. I'm writing about this at my blog at Daily Coast. The first legal pot retailers have finally opened this week in Washington State. So last year, the voters approved Initiative 502, which legalizes the recreational use of marijuana, and the Washington State Liquor Control Board was given the responsibility of regulating the production, processing, and sale of cannabis. But it's taken 8 months for the state agency to develop its licensing policies. But on July 8th, 24 pot retailers were given licenses to open business in Washington, and that's out of 334 licenses that will eventually be approved across the state. So in Seattle, the first pot retail business to open was called Cannabis City, a shop near downtown. And on Tuesday, hundreds of people lined up to buy legal marijuana, and media from all over the globe were on hand to document the event. And by the way, Tom, one of the first customers was our own city attorney in Seattle, Pete Holmes.
Really? So the guy who's a city attorney, he represents the city or is he a prosecutor?
He is our city attorney.
So he represents the city in legal affairs. And
yes, he does.
And he was one of the first people to buy legal pot. That's so cool.
Yes, he's been very forward on this issue and many other progressive issues in the city. And although marijuana is still illegal on the federal level, the governor of Washington State, Jay Inslee, and also the governor of Colorado do maintain an open dialogue with U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder on this subject.
Good.
So marijuana retailers in Washington State are prohibited from doing business within 1,000 feet of any elementary or secondary school, playground, recreation center, child care center, public park, et cetera. And there's also a DUI law, which regulates driving under the influence of cannabis. But in Washington State, it is now legal for individuals over the age of 21 to possess up to 1 ounce of pot. And unfortunately, though, unlicensed growing of the plant is still illegal.
Yeah.
But the state also maintains its medicinal marijuana program under a totally separate set of rules.
Where you can grow up to 15 plants, as I recall. So, Mark, how long did it take for that store to sell out their inventory?
I'm not sure how long it took to sell out, but I do know that people stood an hour in line for many, many hours in the hot sun. I was lucky to get in quickly, but a lot of people were in line all day long.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was a very, very long line, and it was a big, big event.
Were they rationing? Were they limiting? I know the maximum amount that they can sell to an individual at a time is an ounce. Were they selling less than that, or were they selling full ounces?
They were trying to limit people up to, I think at that point, 4 grams, and that's just because there were so many people in line.
Which would be about 4/30ths of an ounce, so a little more than a tenth of an ounce, if I'm remembering my high school, you know, whatever you call it, measurements correctly.
Yes, although the Washington State Liquor Control Board states that it's currently impossible to say how much revenue will be raised by the state.
Mm-hmm.
Some estimates say that up to $2 billion could be generated in the first 5 years because there's a 25% excise tax on the production, processing, and retail sale of legal marijuana in Washington State.
Yeah, that's great. Mark, thanks a lot for the report, and you're blogging over at Daily Kos now, right?
Yes, I will be writing about this today, so
okay,
stay tuned. The story is spreading across the country. This is a big issue that's got legs, Tom, so it's not going to go away.
Okay, Mark Taylor Canfield. Thank you, Mark. Always good to hear from you. Carol in San Francisco. Hey, Carol, what's on your mind today?
Yes, well, actually, I'm calling about something that you spoke about on the 8th, and it was about the child sex trafficking law that you referred to that supposedly problematically addressing the minors who are crossing the border.
Right.
And, you know, I really did want to correct something, that it's the Wilbur Wilforce Trafficking Victims Protection Reauthorization Act. So it wasn't a child sex trafficking act. It was a reauthorization, happens every 3 years, of the labor and sex and general trafficking law.
Okay.
So it wasn't really about that. And the amendments in this 2008 TVPRA were actually humanitarian and very useful. So I'm concerned about the talk about repealing that for expediency.
Oh, I'm not suggesting it should be repealed.
What I was pointing out is that
what this law does is it says that when children from countries that are non-contiguous with the United States, that would be any country that's not Mexico or Canada, basically, when children from those countries show up in the United States, they are we must put them in the least restrictive environment possible, which for a child would typically mean foster care or place them with a relative if there's one available, and that they must have representation. An attorney is pointed to them. They have certain rights and protections that are not afforded to children who are directly from Mexico or Canada. Correct me if I'm wrong on this.
No, I'm not sure about all these details, but I was looking over the 2008 law, and I saw that there were a lot of protections in this law.
Yeah.
But the ACLU is also looking at Flores versus Meese, a 1996 settlement agreement around the protection of immigrant youth, and they're looking at that even more than the Wilbur Wilforce law. I'm not really sure how much either applies, but also about the way they contextualize it, I'm just concerned that you talked about this being a response to the idea of minors being trafficked from other countries, and you were talking about Korean massage parlors, and, you know, I mean, academics are really challenging the kinds of reporting that claim that there was any great number of minors trafficked from other countries. And the research shows that most of the young people that are legally defined as trafficking are homeless, LGBT, and other youth,
right.
And they're doing
tribal
sex.
They're citizens.
Yes, most definitely. That wasn't really accurate that this was...
So are you suggesting that the legislation was a solution for a non-problem?
Well, the trafficking laws is problematic in general. I mean, I wouldn't say it's a non-problem, but the way that the trafficking law is written, I think that the problems aren't on target and cause more problems than they actually do.
Right. Okay. Carol, thank you for the information. Thanks for calling in. Corey in St. Clair Shores, Michigan. Hey, Corey, what's up? Corey, you are on the air.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you, Corey?
Great, great, great. My question has to do with this drone kill memo of Obama's.
Yeah.
Now, apparently, I think I understand the Constitution fairly well, and I think we have a right to due process before the government kills us. And
that, you know, that's certainly embodied in the Fifth through the Eighth Amendments.
So you agree that the government just doesn't have a right to take our life without due process?
I do, and I think that when the president killed, I'm forgetting his name now, but the American
Anwar al-Awlaki.
Thank you, Anwar al-Awlaki, and then killed his son with drones.
Right. Now, there are other circumstances that they explain away how it was an accident with his son, but
yeah.
Targeting of Anwar.
Yeah, I believe that this was illegal and unconstitutional.
Right.
I disagree with the
What it is it's the murder of an American.
Yeah. Yeah. Without due process. I mean, we have.
Why does not everybody demand an impeachment of the president and his trial for murder right now?
You know, if you were going to take an absolutist position, your call is probably correct. I personally would not do that. First of all, this is not something that, you know, Barack Obama woke up one day and said, "Gee, I think I'll do this." It was the continuation of a policy that
was premeditated. You're absolutely right.
You know, I got all that, Corey, but hey, let me finish. This was a continuation of a policy that had happened, that had begun under the Bush administration, and that arguably the United States had been doing since the 40s or the 50s. You know, during the Cold War, the so-called license to kill, you know, the James Bond, I mean, that was the British Secret Service. But, you know, the point is that they're called wet operations. There have always been assassinations being done by intelligence agencies. I would argue that they're always illegal, and that's why they hide them. What happened under the Bush administration and continued with Obama is that they stopped hiding them and started actually bragging about them. To his credit, Obama dialed this back radically from the Bush administration. But I think that as not just as a matter of law, but also as a matter of policy, I think it's a failure. And the reason why is I think that every time we kill somebody with a drone out of the sky in some country that's not our country, two things happen. One, you've got a whole lot of really, really angry relatives and neighbors and friends and tribal members and whatnot who, you know, you kill one terrorist in quotes, create 10, right? I mean, it's just that's happening. And two, you're saying to the world, this is an appropriate way for a major country to conduct itself, which raises the question. You know, Mexico has a big problem with narco traffickers, and there are some Mexican narco traffickers who are living in the United States. So is Mexico going to fly a drone over Phoenix, Arizona and take out a city block because, you know, Carlos so-and-so happens to be living there who's a big Mexican narco trafficker? That's the logical next step. And pretty soon this just starts proliferating all over the world. So, A, I agree with you, it's wrong and it's illegal and arguably an impeachable offense. But more importantly, B, it's bad policy. And so I'm just... You know, Corey, I'm flat out opposed to it. Period. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Up next, we're going to check in with Bob Ney with the Talk Radio News Service and find out what's going on in the world. Welcome back. Brian, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Dunkirk, Indiana. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Yeah, Tom, thanks to you. I just now joined up with the PDA, the Progressive Democrats of America.
Oh, great. PDAmerica.org is the website. Yep.
Yeah, and I started my own online petition, and I would just like to mention it and get it out there to hopefully people would sign it.
Go for it.
It is remove pot from Schedule 1.
Okay.
And my next plan of action is to bug the White House on a daily basis.
Okay.
So I just wanted to get that out there.
All right. All right. It sounds like you've done it. And this is where, you know, Michelle Leonhardt, I think is what her name is, the head of the DEA, who, when she was testifying before Congress,
needs to be fired. She needs to be fired. Yeah.
I agree. She could not distinguish between heroin and pot. And you know, to be the head of the Drug Enforcement Agency and not either know or at least be willing to be honest about the difference between these two drugs is really a tragic commentary on things. Brian, thanks a lot for the call. And Brian's already gone. Okay. Thanks a lot for the call. I was going to ask you to plug your website for your petition, but you call back and tell Danielle, and I'll mention it on the air. Mike in Chicago. Hey, Mike, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. You wanted to talk about LBJ and Nixon?
Yes. You've brought this up on several occasions, and even on your show last night you had mentioned it, and it had me thinking, you know, when you have the idea of Nixon interfering with the Vietnam peace talks, and then I guess the bigger thing is that Johnson withholding the information from the public right. on the premise that it would possibly disillusion the voters or perhaps the public's perception.
Well, Johnson also, what we know now, and this is what Robert Perry brought to the table, what we know now is that Johnson was never absolutely certain of this. He knew that it was being done, and he knew that it was being done by the Nixon campaign, but he didn't know that Richard Nixon knew anything about it. And there's also a tape, which I've played on this show, we've got floating around here someplace, of Richard Nixon calling LBJ. This, the LBJ Library released this one, too, about 3 years ago. And Nixon assuring LBJ that he's not doing this, he doesn't know anything about it. If it's going on in his campaign, he's going to put an end to it. And LBJ saying, oh, well, okay, thank you. I appreciate that. He's sounding very mollified. And it turns out now we know that Nixon was lying. But to LBJ, to his face, right. that Nixon did know about it. But LBJ may well have thought, at least up until the election, and probably after the election, LBJ may well have thought that this was something, somebody who was a rogue element inside the Nixon campaign, or even somebody who wasn't part of the Nixon campaign but just wanted to see Nixon as president.
Okay, well, even knowing that, I mean, and I'm not really sure of the merit of Johnson withholding that. I mean, if he had right. presented it to the public, and even I believe the American public would have been resilient enough to bounce back from this, but it.
Well, I think he was also concerned that if he presented this to the public, that there would be this huge backlash from Republicans and the right saying this guy has gone off the deep end. I mean, this is like, you know, a conspiracy theorist. Johnson would have been labeled the, you know, with the same kind of derision that you know, flying saucer people are.
I disagree, because today I would say that's true.
Yeah. No, it would have been true back then. I mean, today, actually, Johnson would have had a better chance, I think, of getting that out, because people could read the actual documents. The Internet gives people access to the. But back then, it would be, you know, kind of hearsay and this and that, and it was all classified information. So I think it would have been very problematic for him. Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Ten minutes before the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and on the line with us with the Talk Radio News Service brought to you by Goats for the Old Goat.com and free-don.org is Bob Ney, a former member of Congress and author of Sideswiped, and now a reporter with the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Bob, what's going on in the world today?
Hi, Tom. We don't have anything taped on a Nixon basis, but we have live conversation with Governor Perry and President Obama.
Oh-ho!
Ooh, so down in Texas.
Yeah, what are they? What's because you know Perry had originally said he wasn't going to talk to Nixon. To Obama. I was just talking about Nixon in the last break. He wasn't going to talk to Obama. He wasn't going to shake his hand. And then they ended up in the same room together. They ended up in the same helicopter together. Are they best buds forever now or what?
Well, kind of. I wouldn't say it's a complete divorce, but the honeymoon went a little haywire. But they did meet, and it was interesting because afterwards it wasn't as bad lashing as one would think, but the governor asked the president about National Guard on the border, which is not a precedent. They've been down there before and are on the border. And the president said he would consider that, but he said, you know, if you could convince your party to, you know, help me out with the money because
to pay for it.
Temporary.
Yeah.
Temporary solution. Some of the party may not listen to Governor Perry, Tom, as you know. But I thought it was interesting because on the heels of that, now Lindsey Graham, who's now gone through his primary, so he doesn't have to worry about, you know, the Tea Party, has said, look, we have to give the president the money or we're going to look like basically the people that don't care about the children.
Right.
So you're starting to see some of that unravel in the sense of this group action of, you know, deny the president the money because he...
This is exactly what you were predicting about 3 months ago on this program. You were saying, you know, these Republicans who are going total whack-a-bird, when they're through with their primaries, they will return...
Sure.
Or they'll pull back a little bit, and they'll be a little less Tea Party-ish.
Well, they will, and they, you know, they use the immigration line that Eric Cantor lost his, you know, his primary over immigration, which he didn't,
right,
by any stretch of imagination. And then, of course, on the heels of this, Sarah Palin came out with the, you know, the impeachment line, and then Speaker Boehner said, well, he may add the border issue to the lawsuit that he's filing. But he didn't say he wouldn't support the president on the money that the president would like, you know, which is all, again, a temporary situation.
Right.
The other thing, Tom, they can't get past, you know, this whole, I'll call it a revelation because, you know, people never put two and two together until shows started talking about it, which is the 2008 law that was unanimously passed, signed by George Bush, that actually created this situation. So if the president didn't do what he's doing, he would be violating the, you know,
the existing law about trafficking and yes. Sex trafficking, basically.
Yes, because these children fit under that line of questioning of what they would go back to, what type of danger they're in.
Right.
And that was a voice vote. They didn't even have an actual vote. They
right.
voice voted it, which means there was no objection to that.
Yeah, it was functionally unanimous in both the House and the
right.
Senate.
Now, some on the Hill, Tom, are talking about repealing that, but if they did, they'd have to at least give the president the money, then they can talk about the repeal. And after all, the White House can say, well, you know, you all put this into place.
Mm-hmm.
You can talk about repealing it. Right now we have this situation needing this money.
Right.
So I think that overall the president, his visit was not a disaster by any stretch of the imagination, and I think they came out okay on it. And you know, to get their issue out there.
Yeah. And Rick Perry got some publicity for his presidential run that he'll be hopping into the Republican primaries in the next 6 months.
Oh, you mean Governor Perry?
Governor Perry.
He's abandoned his boots. He's got wingtips now.
Yeah. So really?
Yes.
What does that mean?
He is not wearing cowboy boots now.
Oh, you mean literally?
Literally. I love picking up on these things that you happen upon. He's not wearing cowboy boots. He's wearing regular shoes. Let's call them wingtips. You know,
yeah.
Republican wingtips or
yeah.
Democrat wingtips.
Yeah.
But they're wingtips. And he's doing it because he, quote, has a bad back from the cowboy boots.
Oh, he can't handle the high heels.
Maybe. But,
yeah.
but
you can get low heel cowboy boots.
What he is saying, you know, what this really means is he's trying to get away from some of the image because he wants to run for president.
Right. And this is, you know, I mean, the Texas Republican Party platform is, I don't know if you saw this thing over on Alternet, but, the, you know, the 27 crazy, 34 most demented things, you know, doing away with the 17th Amendment, direct election of senators, doing away with most federal agencies, you know, criminalizing homosexuality, doing away with all taxes, doing away with gift tax, minimum wage laws, Environmental Protection Agency, doing away with the Department of Education, doing away with all unelected bureaucrats. It's like, wait a minute.
Doing in cowboy boots.
Right. So I can see why he's trying to distance himself from Texas.
A little bit.
And I think this is probably why the GOP chose Cleveland rather than Dallas.
Oh, I think that has a lot to play in it because if they went, you know, to Dallas and Governor Perry and the whole nine yards, they're trying to get more into the Midwest and Ohio, yeah. Of course. Now, I'm crediting that it's the home of Ellen Ratner. And that's why they picked it.
That's probably got something.
But it's not going to turn her Republican, I suppose.
But I think, no, it won't. It definitely won't. But, you know, John Kasich is the governor of Ohio, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, and he's not anticipating a presidential run?
No.
Okay.
I mean, at some point in time, I think he will.
Yeah.
But he's getting through this election, and then, you know, he was going to run at the time, you know, against George Bush.
Right.
And then they Bush accelerated everything, and Kasich didn't have a chance in that primary, you know.
Right. Back in 2004, you're talking about.
Right, correct.
Yeah. Very interesting. Okay, we got about a minute left, Bob. Anything else going on in the world we need to know about?
Yes, I wanted to mention, well, there's so much going on with Israel and you know, the Palestinians and Iraq and, you know, a new potential country, Kurdistan. But I did want to mention the Benghazi situation because
it's almost as if, Tom, there's like this huge revelation of two attacks, and it's not a silver bullet. You know, there were two different attacks by two different groups. They both, you know, of course, hated America and are both militants, but they sort of revealed this the other day, but it's really not a, you know, something that takes your breath away. It's just the fact that I think we will look at our intelligence sources to see how well they react on the ground.
These are new attacks, or you're talking about the original attack that killed
them? It was the original attack.
Uh-huh.
But it's no huge revelation.
Yeah, so there were actually two attacks in two different groups, and we've got the head of one of those groups now in a federal court here in D.C.
That's right. That's correct.
Very, very interesting. Bob Nay with the Talk Radio News Service. TalkRadioNews.com goes to the old goat.com. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Good talking to you. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It is the holy month of Ramadan for Muslims around the world. In the last hour, Shahid Batar was with us. Shahid Batar, the executive director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee and the People's Campaign for the Constitution. And he was talking about how American Muslims are being targeted for spying. This is the latest revelation from Edward Snowden a couple of days ago. That and Shahid made a comment that, you know, not his words, mine, but to the effect of, well, we've already decided as a country that spying on Muslims is fine. You know, we can, you know, because I was like, you know, well, you know, what if one of the people on that list had been a Tea Party congressman or something? And he's like, well, there actually are a bunch of people on the list who are not Muslims. But, you know, Greenwald has not yet released those names. But it's like this anti-Muslim hysteria, bigotry, I would say. I mean, we've had more people since 9/11 die at the hands of right-wing Christian terrorists in the United States than we have die at the hands of Muslim terrorists in the United States. So, meanwhile, into this fray steps the Reverend Bill Keller, founder of Live Prayer, liveprayer.com, and he's saying to Mr. al-Baghdadi, the fellow who is the leader of ISIS, the group that has that is taking over Iraq, please convert to Christianity. Do I have that right, Bill?
Absolutely, my friend. That's what an evangelist does. We save souls.
Isn't this pushing the edge? I mean, first of all, you are saving souls for yourself, I guess, or for, you know, for Christianity. You know, a Muslim would say that you should convert to Islam. I mean, it's why not just let people live in peace? I don't get it.
Listen, Islam is free to promote their ideology, just like Christians are allowed to promote the gospel all over the world.
Bill, there is no such thing as unitary Islam, and there is no such thing as unitary Christianity. No one speaks for all of Islam. No one speaks for all of Christianity.
Well, that's not true, Tom, because there is one person who does speak for Christianity. That's God through the words of the Bible.
Well, you could say no, Bill. You've got the Catholic Bible is different from the Protestant Bible.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
You've got the six books called the Apocrypha, which are historical books.
Well, even the Ten Commandments are different in the two different versions of the Bible.
But there's no doctrinal differences, Tom.
But the fact of the matter is that there are Christians who will say, well, you know, maybe not, or this, there's all kinds of variations on Christian doctrine.
Tom, if you're a Christian, by virtue of being a Christian, you've accepted Jesus Christ as your Savior. You put your faith in the Word of God. That's what
this
it means
to be a Christian.
By
your definition, Bill. There are all kinds of people.
No, that's not my definition. That's the biblical definition, Tom.
No, it is not.
See, that's the beautiful thing. It's not about what I say.
You're cherry picking. Paul's stuff out of Romans and Ephesians.
Tom, it's not about what I say is right or wrong. It's not about what anybody else. It's what God says. The Bible is very clear on
okay.
the.
Okay, Bill, are you wearing more than two kinds of material in your fabric? Are you wearing a cotton polyester blend?
You're going back to the Levitical laws. It's a common ploy by people who don't understand.
Did Jesus not say, "I did not come to change the law, but to fulfill it"?
So
if he didn't change the law, should you be stoned to death for wearing two different kinds of fabric?
We're not under the law, Tom. We're under grace, my friend. That's the age of Jesus. Listen, Mr. al-Baghdadi is a soul that Jesus Christ died on the cross for, just like he died for my sins and yours. And he has every right to have the opportunity to accept Christ as his Savior. All I've done is facilitate that opportunity.
Facilitate that opportunity.
What, that's right. See, once you rejected that,
by sending him a letter saying, "Hey, why don't you become a Christian?"
Like, it's up to everybody who has to make that choice in life to accept or reject
Bill,
Christ.
Bill, at what point does it sink in? I mean, evangelistic Christianity can be toxic. Look at New Tribes Mission.
It's not toxic.
You got this group that is running around going to every Aboriginal group all around the world and trying to convert them to Christianity. Any place where they're not literate, they're going in and trying to convert them to Christianity. You've got all these cases of sexual abuse, of violence against these people.
This is cultural destruction, Bill.
This is the history of the Christian church.
That's like somebody who bombs an abortion clinic saying he's a Christian. There's nothing in the Bible that supports that kind of activity. And just because you call yourself I can call myself a giraffe doesn't make me a giraffe. You're a Christian because
you're making my point from earlier. Everybody who's a Christian has their own definition of what Christianity means.
But I'm guessing most Muslims do as well.
Tom,
there's only one definition. It's the biblical definition.
There's only one definition for you, Bill.
Anybody who goes outside of that definition is wrong.
Bill, there's only one definition for you. You can only speak for yourself. You can't speak for the Pope.
The Bible is the ultimate authority for all Christians, including the Pope and anybody who puts their faith in Christ, Tom. Just like the Quran is the ultimate authority for those who follow Muslims. That's why Islam has been a false religion from hell about war, peace, and terror for the 1,400 years it's been propagated.
And many of them would say the same thing about your Christianity, Bill. And that kind of rhetoric gets us nowhere.
But those who follow that type of rhetoric, Tom, are not Christians.
No, that type.
Because that's not what the Bible teaches.
Jesus said, turn the other cheek, Bill.
Pardon me?
Jesus said, turn the other cheek. It sounds to me like you're being awful anti-Jesus here.
Not at all.
What did he say when Peter cut off the ear of the soldier?
At the point of a gun. All I do is share the gospel.
What did Peter
to accept or reject Christ?
Bill, what did Jesus say to Peter when he cut off the ear of the soldier who had come to get Jesus?
Exactly my point. That's not what Christianity is about. And Jesus made that example. This isn't about war. That's Islam. You've got the two religions.
Islam is about peace as well.
Both of these religions. Islam is about terror and intimidation. It always has.
During the Crusades, the assistant to the Pope who was riding was talking about how the horses were in blood up to their bodies.
Abortion clinics and calling himself a Christian. Again, he's no more a Christian than a Muslim is when he enacts that kind of activity.
Unless he thinks he is.
Well, he can think he's always the only one.
That's my point.
It doesn't matter what he thinks. It matters what God says in the Bible, Tom.
Bill, let's get this straight.
Makes it simple.
For you, it matters what parts of the Bible you choose to interpret the way that you choose to interpret them.
It's all true.
And that's the wonderful thing about religion and about freedom of religion in this country, is that every one of us can interpret whatever we want out of the Bible or the Quran or the sutras, however we want, and we can conduct our lives as long as it doesn't interfere with another person's life in whatever way we like. And I just don't get it. Why you don't respect that?
Hey, Hey, Tom, let me just say this. The reason Muslims are being targeted in this country, last I checked, it's not Nordic grandmothers that blew up the buildings. It's not Nordic grandmothers that have been foiled 69 times since 9/11 trying to blow things up. If it's Nordic grandmothers, then we should start targeting Nordic grandmothers.
It is Nordic grandfathers, Bill. I have met some of these people. They are white. European ancestry, the militia groups around this country, most of them are boomers, so there a lot of them are grandfathers,
and when
in the last year of the Bush administration, the FBI came out with a report on right wing extremism.
Yeah, it was hysteria. I was in that report. I'm on the hate map for the Southern Poverty Law Center, probably people you agree with.
I'm not
with,
surprised.
Just because I preach the truth
of
the Bible.
That's why I am asking you, Bill, to repent.
I don't need to repent.
Please,
Tom.
Repent. Lay aside your hate.
Mr. Al-Qaddadi needs to repent of his sins or he's going
to
burn in
hell.
Bill,
I am speaking to you as Jesus spoke to Peter. Lay down your sword.
Tom.
Repent, Bill.
I pray for you all the time.
Repent and save your soul.
I can't save my soul. Jesus saved my soul.
Okay, Bill Keller, liveprayer.com. Bill, it's always interesting. It's always good talking with you. Thank you for dropping by.
God bless you, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
You too. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I love debating religion. We'll be back. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And getting my ear back in. And Quirky. Watching Free Speech TV on the DirecTV satellite in Hilton, New York. Hey, Quirky, what's up?
Oh, how you doing, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you?
Listen, before I start on my subject, if you want an intelligent debate with that guy, you're going to have to call Charles Manson. Because they both talk alike.
I don't think Bill Keller is Charles Manson. I think, you know, Bill Keller actually, the reason that I actually put him on the air and the reason that I enjoy talking to him is because most Americans, as they go through their lives, and I'm guessing this has been true of you too, Corky, at one time or another are going to encounter somebody like him. They're on the street corners. They're walking through the subways. Sometimes you have them in your family. And I think that people need to know how to talk back, whether it's talking back to right-wing politicians or whether it's talking back to religious fundamentalists who are such zealots that they will not allow other people or will not accept other people living on their own terms. I think somebody needs to be talking back to them, and somebody needs to be modeling how to talk back to them in a way that doesn't end up with people pulling out guns and having a duel.
Well, I equate him with an insane asylum, because if you go to an insane asylum,
oh, come on.
You cannot convince
Bill is anybody. Not here to defend himself. Let's not personalize this, okay?
No, I'm just saying, in an insane asylum, you cannot convince them that they're not crazy.
Well, actually, everybody the whole purpose of an insane asylum is to help convince them that they're not crazy. I mean, they're supposed to be about treatment.
All right, my subject here.
Okay, yes.
Is the recess appointments to the labor board?
Yeah. They got blown up by the Supreme Court.
Union labor. That's what that was.
I beg your pardon?
I'm thrown out. Now,
I'm sorry, Corky, I talked over you and I missed what you said.
I said the attack on the labor, the appointments.
Right.
That's an attack on unionized labor. That's
of course.
What that is all about.
Of course. That's why, you know, Alito and John Roberts and the other three right-wingers were gung-ho for it. That's, you know, the recess appointments. I mean, the presidents have been making recess appointments just the exact same way Obama did for a long, long time.
Yes. But my point is, what is a recess? I don't have that definition.
Right.
How many? Now,
well, the Supreme Court just created the definition.
If you got to have 60 votes to pass something in the Senate, then I assume under those conditions, with that same logic, you need 60% of the Congress with their butts in the seats to consider yourself in session. There has to be a goal, a line that you have to meet.
What they need to do, and I believe that they can still do this, even given the Supreme Court decision, The Constitution does not define what a recess is. The Constitution, however, does say that the House and Senate shall each operate under rules that they define for themselves. The rules that define a recess in the Senate require that the body as a whole pass a piece, a bill, basically, pass a bill or pass a whatever you want to call it, a resolution, that they are in recess. And that is subject to filibuster, and which is how the Republicans have been able to prevent Harry Reid from going into recess. And so what Harry Reid needs to do is change the rules of the Senate, which can be done with a simple majority. It would be a nuclear option kind of thing. And then I think you'd get around this whole, the whole Supreme Court thing. But I doubt it'll happen. Corky, thanks for the call. 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you and Robert in Shreveport, Louisiana. Hey, Robert, what's on your mind today?
Tom, how's it going today, Mr. Harbin?
Thank you for calling. Thanks for listening to SiriusXM. You wanted to talk about the government not being able to work together?
Yes, I think it's a disgrace that for the last 8 years, focusing on the last 8 years, that they haven't been able to work together there to benefit people. They're doing a disservice to American citizens who they represent.
Yeah.
Because of their, you know, petty and childish partisan bickering that's going on up there. And I think it's really a disgrace, you know, that is happening.
Yeah, for the record, it's been 6 years, not 8 years. There was a meeting, Senator Sanders referred to this in the first hour of our program when he was on as a guest. There was a meeting the night that Barack Obama was inaugurated. It was in the Caucus Room restaurant down at the corner of 9th Street and D Streets, Northwest, and here in Washington, D.C. Caucus Room is one of these fancy schmancy restaurants where, you know, $50 steak kind of places. And a group of members of the House and Senate got together. In fact, here's the list. Here's the attendee list. It was Paul Ryan, Eric Cantor, Kevin McCarthy, Pete Sessions, Jeb Hensling, Pete Hoekstra, Dan Lundgren, Jim DeMint, John Kyle, Tom Coburn, John Ensign, and Bob Corker. They got together, and they basically, you know, after the meeting, Pete Sessions said, we're going to be like the Taliban. You know, we're going to be an insurgency. And Kevin McCarthy, who has just been elevated to Eric Cantor's old job of House Majority Leader, said, we're going to fight them on every single bill. So basically, these guys, with the help of Frank Luntz and Newt Gingrich came on this program and bragged about this. These guys got together and said, we are going to destroy the Obama presidency. We're going to prevent him from having any kind of legacy. We're going to block everything he does, even things we agree with, we're going to block so that he will go down in history as being a useless, ineffectual president. And because more than 60% of Americans do not know, cannot tell you, more than 60% of Americans cannot tell you which party controls which branch of Congress. These guys knew that if they destroyed this country, if they refused to extend unemployment insurance, if they kept our crazy trade policies in place, if they did things that hurt the middle class, that the people would blame the president because they don't realize how Congress works and they don't realize who's in charge. And that's exactly what's happening. It was a brilliant strategy that was hatched apparently by Frank Luntz, although the Republicans tried this back in 46 and 47, but President Harry Truman called them out on it, and he won re-election based on that in 48. But this president has not been successful in calling these guys out, unfortunately, and the press has not been had any integrity on this issue at all.
And what they did, the Republicans sacrificed their own party,
yes,
to do that.
Yep.
And that's why, you know, they're in the shape that they're in. And another thing is, I think that the working class and the middle class Americans should have an all-out revolt and revolution against this government now. Not necessarily to the point to where that should be a great march on Washington, you know, for the middle class, for the poor and the middle class to get the minimum wage raised and to get them to take care of the people here in America.
I'm with you, Robert. And you know, there's, for example, the Senate actually passed, I mean, some Republicans actually signed on to extending long-term unemployment benefits. It went to the House of Representatives, where it would pass if it was put up for a vote. It would absolutely pass the House. John Boehner, all by himself, one man, If you want to make a call to somebody about this, call John Boehner's office and say, please bring long-term unemployment benefits to the floor for a vote. He refuses to let the members of his own party or the Democratic Party in the House of Representatives vote to extend long-term unemployment benefits. And they would have extended it from December to May. I mean, it's already past May. But if that did come up for a vote right now, all those people who qualified would get a fairly substantial check. They get 5 months' worth of unemployment benefits. They could pay down their mortgages. They could pay down their credit cards, and it would stimulate the economy. But we can't have that. Stimulating the economy would make things look good. And if things look good, President Obama gets a political benefit from that. So they're not going to let that happen. Robert, thank you for the call. Well said. Peg, in Congress, Arizona, you wanted to respond to Bill Keller.
Yes, Tom. Thanks again for the work that you do. But I have a brief response to Bill and those in the country who are of his mindset. As a Native American, I just need to publicly say, George ain't my father, Sam ain't my uncle, and Jesus ain't my savior. And Christianity has been the religion that has been number one responsible for the genocide of my ancestors in the name of Jesus.
Yep.
And to this day, continue to keep the people of my tradition and ancestry in the horrible plight that they're in, because unfortunately for generations, my people have bought the Christian idea of it's Jesus or die.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that kind of rhetoric really, really scares me and angers me. But I just needed to say that.
Well,
I appreciate the opportunity to do so.
Thank you, Peg. It's well said, and I think it's an important point, and that's why I started to go down that road with Bill. He didn't. I don't think he knew what I was talking about, so I didn't go very far with this New Tribes Mission thing, which is an extension, really, of what started with the Puritans in the 1600s in the East Coast of the United States, of either convert or die, right? And although New Tribes Mission isn't saying convert or die, they're saying convert or we'll just keep pestering you, I guess. But the net of it is not all that different. You've got tribes who, now that they have had contact with modern things, television and you know, weapons of war and whatnot, it's destroying their way of life.
Absolutely.
And it's a tragedy. I mean, they're losing their languages. They're losing their way of life. We're losing traditions. We're losing ancient wisdom. We're losing actual functional knowledge, like, you know, plants are in these various environments that are useful for things. I mean, it's just, and the Holocaust that Native Americans have suffered in this country is never, ever, and I put myself in this category too, it's never, ever mentioned frequently enough. We need to talk about it more. Peg, thanks so much for calling. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
We'll be back with Anything Goes Summer right after this. 28 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to Tom Hartman Program, the place where despair is not an option. And, aha. Robert in Milton, Delaware. Hey, Robert, you wanted to get in on this conversation about who's a Christian and who's not?
Not really, Tom. What I really want to know, all religions to me all have the same principles to, you know, don't kill, the golden rule, live as your particular prophet is what I believe people ought to be doing.
Right.
To believe means to be and live, I think. And love is the only way we're going to get through all this. The oligarchs and the 1% don't care. Their greed is going to run everything into the ditch, the corporations and Citizens United. Because of their greed for the petroleum companies, we keep giving all this money to these super rich people who have no connection to the earth or what it means to produce something, produce love. Produce connections with other human beings. That's what we need to be doing. We need to be getting away from petroleum.
Yeah.
I don't have, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Good point, Robert. Thank you for the call. Paul in Warren, Michigan. Hey, Paul.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. What's up?
That's good. I watch your program as often as I'm able to. I love your program. I love having Dish Network because of the programming, Democracy Now!, Mike Paventonio. I like all the shows. It's an alternative to the crap that we get on the national news. But the reason I called today was I was kind of taken back at how aggressive you were with that guy. Now, not necessarily that I agree with what he was saying concerning Christianity, because I am a Christian, and it is our job as Christians to spread the word, to tell people about Christ and that he died for our sins and rose for our justification. And we are to accept him. Now, those of us who do it, we're not trying to shove it down your throat, because Jesus told us, he that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches.
Right.
So, you know, I was just amazed at how aggressive you were with this guy and those two black guys that were on last week who, you know, just really just sickened me. I would
be talking about
be more aggressive with those two.
The conservatives on our TV program. Paul, here's my take on Christianity and early Christianity. Jesus had 12 disciples, and they went on to continue teaching about him after his crucifixion and resurrection. However you want to define it. That church, it was called the various names for it, the Jesus Church, the Church of Peter. That church died out, and in fact, arguably was put to death by a guy named Paul, whose job was to kill Christians. And if you've studied any Christian history, you're probably familiar with all the horrible ways that the various disciples died, and you know, or the stories that were told about how they died. And Paul, you know, a generation later, Paul, you know, was struck blind on his horse on the way to Ephesus and had his epiphany, and thus the word epiphany, and, you know, was visited by Jesus and said, you know, stop killing my people and go spread my word. And so Christianity got rebooted, and now we have what's called the Pauline Church. And it was a church that was run by people who never knew Jesus, who were not part of the original inner circle. And I think it's very easy, if you read the writing, you know, if you read the sayings of Jesus, to find in there a religion that is more, that's basically Jewish. And, you know, Jesus was a Jew, and all of his followers were Jews, and he was not commissioning them. There is one place in the Bible that contradicts this statement, but it's hugely disputed among scholars whether this was Jesus who said it or whether it was one of the Pauline scholars who later added it, because the Bible, you know, is many, many centuries to be assembled into its current form, and it's gone through many, many iterations. But that basically they, you know, they were saying it's just for us. You know, Jesus said, you know, if you go to somebody's house and you're not welcome, kick the dust off your shoes as you leave their house, right? It's just, you know, don't push yourself on them. This is for us. This is, you know, this is the Jewish Messiah for Jews. And Paul, of course, didn't take that. Paul took it beyond Jews and went to the Greeks and went to the Romans and went to the and wrote letters to the Romans and whatnot. But it's the Pauline Church, and so, I mean, there's a lot of different ways that you can look at Christianity. It's almost like the schism that happened in Islam, that is now the Shia-Sunni debate, had the Jesus Church survived. But they didn't survive Paul. They didn't survive the Pauline Church. So the original followers of Jesus died out within the first century, or arguably the second century. And there was a lot of competition between the followers of Jesus and the followers of Paul in the first couple of centuries. Mr. Funk, I think his first name is Robert, and Elaine Pagels write at some length about this. I mean, there's a lot of really good scholarship on this stuff. So to say that it's our job as Christians to spread the word of Jesus, that, you know, if you believe that, I absolutely honor that. But please don't use that belief to commit cultural genocide on other people. You know, if somebody wants to hear the word, your interpretation of the word of God or the word of Jesus, you know.
Well, I don't have an interpretation, my friend. That's what I'd
well, you
like
do.
To say.
You do.
Well, no, I don't.
We all
people
do.
People have said that to me, but, you know, I've read in Peter's writings where he said, knowing this first, that no prophecy of Scripture is of any private interpretation, but holy men of God spoke, moved by the Holy Spirit. We're dependent upon the Holy Spirit to reveal to us what God is saying to us in His Word.
Peter didn't say that.
His word, not ours, not mine, not to support my argument or what I think or how I feel, because I'm just a walking hunk of dust, my friend, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that Jesus decided to take my sins upon himself and die for me.
But what did he say was the first law?
The tree of life.
What did he say when I forget which disciple asked him, I think it might have been John, said, what is the first law? What did he say?
To love thy neighbor.
As thyself.
To love the Lord thy God with all thy strength, with all thy might, and to love thy neighbor. He said, the second is like unto the first, to love thy neighbor as thyself.
Right. And he didn't say go out and get people to follow.
Done in this world anymore.
Yeah, but he didn't say that the first law was to evangelize.
No, he didn't.
So if you're going to say, this is my obligation as a Christian.
In the 28th chapter of Matthew, he says, go you therefore into all the world, teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, in the name of the Son, in the name of the Holy Spirit,
right,
teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I commanded you.
My point, Paul, is if you want to take your... First, I mean, when he was explicitly asked, what is the first commandment? It was to love others. And that should be the first, you know, if you're going to say it's our job as Christians to do something, that's what it's our job as Christians to do. If you want to be following what
Jesus. Of course, we need to love each other. I'm not in disagreement with that.
Well, maybe loving each other means respecting each other's religions.
We've come to a state that we are today. I speak to my wife sometimes about how it was when I was growing up. You know, it seemed I came from a small town, Mount Clemens, Michigan, and it seemed that the whole town was just one big family. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then I grew up and found out that there were things going on that I never would have expected out of people. You know, I grew up expecting that people would be honest and people would be caring, but I found out that that's not the case.
Well, at least not always the case. I mean, welcome to human nature. It's
use Christianity to support some silly whim or whatever it is that they and word
sure.
God was not given to us for that.
Okay, Paul, I got it. Thank you very much for the call. I think we've kind of come to the end of this. Gary in Rapid City, South Dakota. You want to defend spaceships?
Well, yeah, Tom. I tell you what, I watch your program every day.
All right.
Faithfully.
Gary, just for the record, because I know what you're saying, is I had made the comment earlier that Lyndon Johnson felt that if he accused Nixon of treason, that he would have been treated like a crank the way people treat people who believe in spaceships. For the record, I think it's crazy to think that there aren't spaceships out there. Or at least that there aren't other intelligences out there.
That's what I wanted to know.
You know, absolutely. But the point is that when a public official comes out and says that, it's the end of their political career.
Well, yeah, but...
And that's what I was talking about. Lyndon Johnson didn't want to be viewed as somebody who was on the margins.
But he was stupid.
Well, you could argue that. I personally think he should have told America what Richard Nixon was up to. I don't know if it would have helped Hubert Humphrey win the election or not. But I think he should have told America what Nixon was up to. But that would have required him to also tell America that he had been negotiating with the South and North Vietnamese behind the scenes, and he had worked out peace. And by telling America that, that would instantly blow up that peace. And it would probably blow up any prospect for peace for a couple of years, which would mean a lot more people would die. So Nixon was facing a horrible choice. Johnson was facing a horrible choice because of Nixon's treason. And You know, history is judging Nixon poorly.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I think the only president who's come out and said something about spaceships was Reagan. I'm pretty sure Reagan is on the record. Reagan and Dennis Kucinich. We'll be back. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Barbara in Dover, Delaware, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Satellite Network. Hey, Barbara, what's up?
Well, I wanted to comment and ask a question about how are we as a regular voter get to doing anything about the five right-wing judges that made the decisions on the union, on Hobby Lobby, and et cetera. Also, I wanted to have John Boehner's telephone number. How do I get that?
You can get to John Boehner's office by calling the switchboard, congressional switchboard at 202-225-3121, and they will say Congress, and you just say, please connect me with John Boehner's office, and boom, you'll be there. You can do that with any member of Congress. It's all the same number, 202-225-3121, and if you go to callcongress.org, you'll find that number and a couple of toll-free numbers that can get you into Congress. But
that's true. 202-225-3121.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's the number for the congressional switchboard. Yeah.
Okay. And also, to go back to the, what can we do about the right-wing judges in the Supreme Court that made these terrible decisions? And you're suggesting that we do something, but
we can,
I don't have...
There are three things that can be done. The first is that we can recognize and spread the word that presidents nominate Supreme Court justices, and therefore we cannot allow the White House to slide into the hands of another right-wing Republican, at least as these guys are aging out. You know, there's going to be probably in the next 6 years, there's going to be at least four, in all probability, maybe five justices put on the Supreme Court. And because you've got that many people who are in their mid to late 70s on the court. And so, you know, this is the election of 2016 is going to be a very dangerous election for the Supreme Court, because I'm guessing between 2016 and 2020, whoever's president during those 4 years, or by 2024 during those 8 years, whoever is president during that term is probably going to replace Kennedy, Scalia, Breyer, Ginsburg. Although I'm guessing that Ginsburg is going to retire this year. We'll see. Maybe next year. But maybe even Thomas? I mean, you know, John Roberts is the young guy, and Sam Alito's fairly young. He's in his 60s. Sotomayor and Kagan, they're both, you know, young. So number one, tell people it's the president. Number two, we need to amend the Constitution to get around the Supreme Court with regard to their saying that money is speech and corporations are people. And that's movetoamend.org. Go to that organization, become a local chapter. You can do it, or you can go, you know, volunteer or help out with one. And number three, Congress actually has the power to regulate the Supreme Court and to provide exceptions to what they can judge or rule on. So Congress could pass a law saying we are asserting that money is not speech. Spending money is a behavior that can be regulated, and you, the Supreme Court, may not rule on this. And under Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution, that becomes law, and the Supreme Court has to shut up. And in fact, the Supreme Court in the Hobby Lobby case essentially said, we had to decide this way because in the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which was explicitly Congress regulating the Supreme Court, it's a bill that says the Supreme Court has to rule within these particular parameters. Because of that act, we had to rule this way. So Congress can regulate the Supreme Court. It just, you know, they just have to have enough spine to do it, which, you know, I'm not holding my breath for. Barbara, thanks for the call. Okay, UFOs, seeing is believing. Jimmy Carter, quote, I don't laugh at people anymore when they say they've seen UFOs. I've seen one myself. Jimmy Carter. Bill Clinton said, if we were visited someday, I wouldn't be surprised. I just hope it's not like Independence Day. He's talking about the movie. Those are bad aliens. He said, it may be the only way to unite this increasingly divided world of ours. Think about it. All the differences among people of Earth would seem small if we were feel threatened by a space invader. And then Reagan, in a speech to the United Nations, said, quote, I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And he made other comments to other people. Reagan said that he saw a UFO in 1974 when he was in a Cessna Citation, a private plane flying over Bakersfield, California. And he alerted the pilot, a fellow by the name of Bill Painter, to the UFO, which they both saw. And this was, and Reagan told the story to the Wall Street Journal's bureau chief, Norman Miller, according to the Discovery Channel. So there you go. It's more than one president. Amazing. Michael in Silver Spring, Maryland. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Have you noticed that when you talk to evangelicals, when you bring up situations like the Crusades and Timothy McVeigh and, you know, Christians, you know, Custer wiping out the Indians and, you know, and they'll say, well, they weren't Christians.
Right.
They weren't Christians. That's the tactic that they do to negate any one of your arguments about anything historical is by going, they weren't Christians.
Well, it's not even historical. I mean, the bombing of abortion clinics has happened multiple times within our lifetimes, probably the lifetime of everybody who's watching this. It's contemporary. And Bill Keller is
exactly
saying those guys aren't Christians. And I'm saying they are if they say they are.
Yeah, because Keller would dare tell Timothy McVeigh or any one of those abortion bombers that right in their face that you're not a Christian. He wouldn't dare do that.
Yeah.
He wouldn't dare cross that line and say that somebody isn't. But when you bring it up in an argument or in anything, they go, they weren't, you know, the Crusades, those that weren't Christians. They weren't Christians. It's constantly. That's all you hear, and that's all they say all the time in any discussion is they weren't Christians.
Yeah. Well, in a way, the political parties do the same thing. Oh, he's not really a Republican, you know, or he's not really a Democrat. But, yeah, you're right. And that's an old strategy to say, you know, my way is the only way and we're the good guys and they're the bad guys, even though they call themselves the same as us. And it's like I think that, you know, in all the religions of the world, people of those religions need to embrace the people who are the renegades, the destructive ones among their religion, and they need to be calling them out rather than us calling them out, rather than, you know, somebody who's not part of that religion calling them out. They need to be doing it themselves within their own group. So anyhow, Michael, thank you for the call. Good point. Cindy in Euclid, Ohio. Hey, Cindy, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hi, Tom. As an Ohioan, I'd just like to express my outrage at John Boehner's shenanigans.
Oh, that's right. He represents you.
Pardon me?
He represents you in Congress.
Yeah, misrepresents me.
Yeah.
As an American, I'd like to express my continuing outrage against the caucus room conspirators and their decision to block, without, regardless of the issue, anything this president did. And that is treason. I suggest that perhaps we could all get together, by petition or whatever, to effect a citizen's arrest on these traitors.
Hmm.
Also, if you'd
that would be
like to hear something. Pardon me?
That would be very interesting.
Wouldn't it be?
Yeah. Somebody, you know, that would make great guerrilla theater. I don't, you know, I don't think that you could physically approach one of them, but,
No.
You know, you could hold a ceremony or call a press conference or something. I don't know. Anyhow, you were going to make another
note,
point, Cindy?
Tom?
Yeah.
Are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, on a stranger note, I did see a UFO in Texas between Haltom City and Arlington on one of the I decided not to take the 820 loop and went straight through. And there was one floating about 5 feet off the ground, totally soundless, took off like a shot, and then went straight up.
Whoa.
It was amazing. I ended up with iritis in my left eye, and some people, for 23 years I had it.
Because it was so bright?
Which I think maybe because I was just in shock, and
yeah.
I kept turning my head back and forth. And I think maybe the rearview mirror might have blocked my right eye.
Yeah.
It was in my left eye that I got the iritis. I don't know if it's, you know, maybe that's why they're just observing, is because their propulsion system is harmful to us.
Could be.
I don't know.
I think I've seen UFOs twice. Once was I was a little kid. My dad got me and took me out to the backyard and said, look. You know, and my dad thought he was seeing UFOs. And the other time was Nigel Peacock, who is our webmaster, one of our two webmasters, who lives in the UK. Nigel and I were driving someplace, and from someplace to someplace, and we were driving by Stonehenge. There's actually a highway that goes like, you know, a quarter mile from Stonehenge. And in fact, you can almost see it from the road. And we were driving by Stonehenge, and it was 10, 11 o'clock at night. And zoom, this thing comes shooting across the sky, comes, you know, really, really fast. And I thought, oh, it's a comet. And it comes to a screeching halt way up there in the sky, pauses for a minute, does about a 70-degree turn, and goes flying off in another direction. Zoom, like that. And there's, you know, and I can't speak for Nigel, but, I think the two of us agreed that this was not, if this was something that was man-made, it was something that is a technology that is not publicized, shall we say.
Tom, if that was one of ours, then we've killed a lot of astronauts and a lot of fighter pilots for nothing.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, I had my picture taken last week, week before last, the 4th of July parade here. Blanquita Cullum was the master of ceremonies. She's Alan Ratner's roommate and an old friend of mine, and she invited Louise and I to come to the grandstand, and we were there. And who is the astronaut who saw the UFOs? I'm forgetting his name, but he was there, and I had my picture taken with him. He was one of the guys who went up. And anyway, Cindy, thanks so much for the call. We didn't discuss UFOs. I just shook his hand and had my picture taken. We'll be back. Oh, we won't be back. It's the end of the show. Holy cow. Well, thank you so much for spending your afternoon with us, and or morning, or whatever it may be, wherever you are. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. It's not a spectator sport. You have to show up. So please do so. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com, everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.